Hi everyone, and thank you for joining us on another episode of Lid Publishing's podcast, Lid Radio. My name is Miro, and I will be your host for today's show. With me today is author Kevin Duncan. How are you today, Kevin?
Very fine, thank you. Hi, Miro.
Hi, it's good to have you back here for the podcast. And of course, for our listeners, as you may have noticed, Kevin did join us last week on the podcast in our series with him. And he has joined us today to discuss one of his books and the themes and ideas behind it. But of course, for those who might have missed the first episode in our series, feel free to go back and check it out. Very insightful and very interesting stuff. And of course, Kevin is a business advisor, marketing expert, motivational speaker, and author. Now, the topic of today's podcast is the business bullshit book. And we thought it would be a great topic to discuss, as it is one of the most unique titles in the Concise Advice series. And again, thank you very much for joining us today, Kevin. And the first question I would like to ask you is, what was the inspiration behind this book?
Well, it's a very long, long story. It all started back at the beginning of the 80s when I took my first trainee job in advertising. And frankly, when I first started going to meetings in that ad agency, I was gobstruck really by, really? What are you talking about? I didn't know, half the time I didn't know what they were talking about. Now, every industry's got its technical mumbo jumbo and what have you, but really, some of the stuff I just thought, no, you could express that much more clearly. So gradually, initially, without anyone knowing, I used to go into meetings with a pad and a pen and pretend I was taking notes, but actually half the time I was writing down all the rubbish they were saying. And then once a year, I would do a crudely typed up summary of this and ping it round to colleagues and what have you for a bit of fun, which sometimes I got into a bit of trouble for, but gradually it gained a bit of momentum. So fast forward really to way, way later on, decades later, I had hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of these. And in fact, by about 5 years ago, I had about 1,500 of them. And the amount of the stuff being said was getting greater and greater. And I thought I could do a dictionary of this. So I did.
Right. And judging from the book itself, the idea of business bullshit doesn't seem to be in short supply. And it seems to be increasing, as a matter of fact. Yeah. Why do you think that is?
Yeah, this is a really interesting debating point. I think there's the one big reason, I think, is the internet. Because in the early days, pre-internet, then for sure there would have been a proportion of people sitting in business meetings talking bullshit, for sure. But the general public wasn't necessarily exposed to that. They didn't see it. So whatever that percentage was of people, as it were, indulging in bullshit, it's got to have been less than 10%, and it might have been closer to 2 or 3% of, let's say, the UK. As soon as you can see or hear this stuff online being spoken, then I think everybody starts copying everybody else.
Yeah, we have a problem.
We have a problem, and it then spills out of business and into politics, sport, and almost every other domain you can imagine. So I think that's the fundamental underlying point. I think that there are perhaps a couple of others that are close cousins to it. The second one is the fact that by almost a fluke, English has become the language of the internet. So if, for example, Spanish or Chinese or some other language had become the default language of the internet, I think then possibly there'd be less bullshit.
Right.
Because those languages are less inclined to speak that way.
Yeah.
But actually, English was the norm. But of course, when I say English, what I really mean is American. And so I put the blame predominantly at the feet of Americans. And then there's a third related point, and that is that the bulk of American bullshit comes from men who are obsessed with the military and sport. And when you join all those bits together, what you've essentially got is people taking their bull, as it were, from, let's say, baseball or something to do with the army, and suddenly they're asking for a ballpark figure, or they're saying, let's touch base, or let's hit the ground running, or when the rubber hits the road. And by the time you get onto the military and sporting metaphor, it just never ends.
Right, yeah. And of course, interesting to add on to that is the rise of the so-called internet speak, as we had, which is, I think, in my opinion, formed its own version of the English language at this point. And if you show it to someone who, let's say, isn't all that internet savvy or familiar, they will just look at it and they will have no idea what's going on.
Yep.
Same thing with the rise of the so-called meme culture. Everything from images, text, etc., I think has been actually a lot more important as a factor in the world of business, politics, entertainment, that we all really should give it credit for. I mean, this is some really powerful culture stuff. And also, as we know, politics is downstream from culture.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. I agree with that.
Yeah, and as we're on the topic now, so this is something that I find very fascinating, because as you say, it's now spilled onto the internet and our everyday life. So how can we actually spot this kind of vocabulary in our everyday goings? And more importantly, how can we actually deal with it effectively?
Yeah. So with regard to spotting it, I personally don't think it's very difficult to spot. I think it's easy to spot. The question is, once you've spotted it, are you going to do anything about it? So it's a decision that individuals should make, and it depends on context. So for example, I don't think there's anything wrong with some technical specialists using geeky things, acronyms and so forth, to communicate ultra fast, so long as they absolutely know that they're in a peer group where everybody knows what they're talking about, no one's excluded, and that's fine. That is okay. I think if that type of jargon spills out into everyday work, and it's perfectly evident that there are loads of other people from different departments who don't know what you're talking about, then I think that's wrong. But then there is an entire genre of talk which I broadly call obfuscation. It's an interesting word. And what it essentially means is making something overly and deliberately complicated so that nobody else knows what you're talking about.
Right.
And even though it sounds counterintuitive, it makes a lot of sense, because, for example, if you think about it, if I'm a plumber and I come in and I say, "Cool, that's really complicated," and I use some technical jargon, then you don't know what I'm talking about. You have to rely on me to pay you to get it done, and then I get paid, brackets, maybe a bit more. And the same is true of mechanics and accountants and management consultants, and so the list goes on. So in some instances, they deliberately want jargon and bull to cloud what they're doing so that no one else knows.
Yeah, and absolutely. And just from the top of my head, as you were talking, you know, I thought of perhaps at least 10 or 15 different phrases that I've seen used, at least in my field, which is very sort of technically orientated. And if I go up to someone, let's say in HR, and I say, "Well, how do you think that the RNG on the latest quarter in our KPIs, you know, familiarity of, you know, yada, 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 yada."
Yeah.
They will just look at me and say, "What?"
Right.
And this gives a sense of, well, I seem to be appearing very smart because I'm talking in all these technical terms and abbreviations, but actually what I'm doing is I'm confusing someone who might very well be able to help me or assist me, but they simply have no idea what I'm talking about.
I think that's true. So if it means that communication is impaired, then obviously it's hopeless. I can understand in a number of office contexts, certainly where subordinate people feel that they have to use this type of language in order to make it clear that they know it and that they feel that they want to use it to fit in. But if that runs for too long, then really you've just got a bunch of people talking a load of rubbish all day. And it's not uncommon for people to come out of a meeting and think, "Well, 2 hours worth of stuff has been said, but I haven't got a clue what I'm supposed to do as a result."
Yep.
And that's counterproductive. And of course, we know that productivity in the UK is significantly down, and it could well be because a lot of people are talking about a lot of stuff, but they don't really know what they're supposed to be doing.
Yeah. And as we're on the topic now, can you perhaps give us your top three business bullshit words or phrases that you have in the book?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, because the interesting thing about it, this is a dictionary. I sort of comment on stuff as I go through, but my format for that, such as it is that I give a quick example of what I think it is. That's, as it were, definition number one. And then number two is where I go off-piste and say, "Come on, this is rubbish." So I think this is okay, right? I'm going to read from the book.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
because this is the best way to give you a flavour. So my top worst offender is going forward.
Right.
Now, the essence of this is people will stick that on the end of anything, to which I'm thinking, which other direction would you ordinarily like to go other than that? So in my definition from the book, I say going forward, first definition is, number one, the opposite of backwards. So that's clear then. Now, number two, this is where I then go off on one a bit. I say it's truly a king among kings, the undisputed champion of utter bullshit, with the possible exception of proactive. It's an entirely pointless modifier, somehow designed to suggest a forward-looking demeanour when any fool knows that a backward one would be detrimental for everybody, except possibly historians who should indeed adopt a backward-looking approach. It's a selfish waste of time perpetrated by anyone using these two utterly redundant words. Those subjected to them could probably increase their life expectancy by removing themselves from the room immediately whenever they're spoken, thus saving years of meeting time.
Brilliant.
So there we go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it seems to be so common. I seem to have heard going forward, well, every day as I go forward.
So. Well, absolutely. And you do go forward. I suppose you could go back, but that's a whole different thing.
Yeah.
So would you like another one?
Yes, please.
Right. Okay. Leverage or leverage. I can't stand this. I mean, this is really nasty. And people talk about leveraging opportunities, which sounds as though they're some sort of physicist. So my definition number one for this is ability to move something with a lever, because that's what it is. Number two, horrible and near omnipresent noun or verb, false notion that business is anything whatsoever to do with physics, suggestion of power and influence, last bastion of cliché-ridden presenter in full bullshit mode, as in, we really need to leverage our assets on this one, Steve. Sounds impressive, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Doesn't mean anything.
No. Yeah, it almost seems like it's holding something hostage, almost, as if, you know, we have less these resources, but, you know, we're going to leverage them.
Well, it makes everybody sound so macho and important, doesn't it? So if I say, we need to leverage our assets on this one, Steve, I kind of sound a bit as though I'm in charge.
Yeah.
But if I said, we need to make the best of what we've got, is that okay, Steve? It just sounds rather more functional.
And it makes more sense.
And it makes more sense.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So let's do a third, right? Proactive. Now, this one drives me nuts as well. Because at the base of this is, well, would you ever do anything that was inactive or inert or not active? It's very interesting because the word proactive, hadn't heard it up until about 10 years ago. And it's just the PRO on the front has suddenly appeared.
And I'm pretty sure it's just a brand of yogurt, isn't it?
Aha, very good. Yes, maybe. Without the E. Proactive. So on this one, I say definition number one is tending to initiate rather than react. But number two, I describe as an omnipresent adjective in advertising and PR agencies, as in, we pride ourselves on taking a proactive attitude, as though a passive or a reactive one would be more appealing. Pretty much redundant word, and a close contender for worst bull of the lot, along with going forward.
Right. They link up.
They link up.
And of course, now that you've mentioned it, you know, it seems to be that if you say something is proactive, and of course in the space of an agency or an, you know, advertising or marketing agency, well, surely being proactive is assumed. Because if you're reactive, that means something isn't done, so that implies a problem, which then you have to react. But if you simply do the work and you get on, that means that you are actively being proactive, so there's no reason to ever use the word.
I think that's exactly right. Nicely put. I think now that you've said that, I suppose there's a sort of underlying paranoia that if anybody is reactive, close quotes, then they're somehow browbeaten. Now, on one hand, you could say, well, they lack imagination, so they only ever do what they're told to do. But then there's also the submissive aspect of that, which is, yeah, actually, they get kicked by their client or customer because they just react, and that's that.
Yeah.
So it's almost an aspirational thing where they, I wish we were proactive, and lots of clients will say to their suppliers and agencies, can you be proactive, which is just really a euphemism for saying, could you be smart and intelligent, please, and let me know if there's anything else I should be doing that will help the business.
Yeah. Now, I love creativity, and I think it's very important when it comes to business. But as we've just discussed, for example, the advertising sector and the marketing sector, in your experience, in your opinion, have you noticed or perhaps worked with any sector or department that gets really creative with their bullshit?
Yes, I thought about this. I struggle to find an entire industry, really, or a department or a technical specialism that is particularly, quotes, creative with their bullshit. There are undoubtedly those that generate more pound for pound, but it's usually because they can't stop using acronyms, or they're so techie or specific about something that it's almost impenetrable stuff. But I wouldn't necessarily say they were creative. My favourite ones is where people generally, usually when they're quite exasperated, start saying very funny things, and they're usually analogies. And so in the dictionary, I also take ones which aren't so much confusing, they're just fun, because they're describing some degree of panic at work, usually. So would you want some examples?
Yes, please.
Yeah, I thought you might. So I brought two or three favourites along. I think my top favourite is, this is like trying to stab a seal with a banana.
Okay.
Yeah. Now, this is something that one of my bosses in an ad agency said to me 30 years ago. And, of course, this is creative, because he's created this extraordinary image whereby, I don't know where he's got it from, so apparently we've got a seal on the table, and somehow he's got a banana, as though that were a weapon of choice. Yeah. He's not got a knife or a gun. No,
and of course, we don't advocate for our listeners. You know, we stand very much against stabbing seals or anyone with a banana.
Me too.
You should probably just eat it as a good form of potassium for your daily five. So
yeah, the banana, not the seal. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So then in his mind, he's got this extraordinary image, if you like, and of course, we've all got it now, of trying to hit something slippery with a bendy object which just keeps sliding off, which then brilliantly sums up the total futility of what he's trying to do or been asked to do. So I like things like that. A similar one, or one a bit like it, was where one of my bosses said, I feel as though I'm grasping at fog here. And so you can see he's getting very creative there. That clearly is an impossible task. And my third one is another one of my bosses, who in a moment of exasperation said, there are 15 balls up in the air on this project and two of them are mine.
Right.
So he was essentially describing a plate spinning scenario where everything's going on but nothing's under control. And also suggesting that if it all fell apart, which he probably thought it was going to, he'd probably get fired. Which he didn't.
But, okay. That's good to know. I'm happy that he didn't.
Yeah,
that's. I mean, do you think that perhaps people actually take the time to think of these? They seem to be not something you simply come up with.
Yeah, I think that those examples of purely creative ones, the ones I witness, are indeed generated in the moment by intelligent, articulate people, and usually driven with a bit of exasperation. those are what you might call little outbursts, but they usually come from people who do not ordinarily talk much bull at all.
Right.
I think there's a totally different type of person who's way, way, way less creative, who talks bull all day as a default setting because they don't have the additional intelligence or give it the extra thought to say, do you know what, I could express this in a much more articulate, clear way.
Yeah.
So that it's easier for everyone else.
Yeah. Now, the last question I'd like to ask you is perhaps the most important one, and that's, how do we deal with this? How do we stop business bullshit in its tracks before it takes over office conversations and, more importantly, before it gets in the way of our productivity? And as we mentioned, it seems to be getting a good grip of it.
Yeah. You know, I'm not a defeatist, but my immediate answer to that is we can't stop it now. It's already won. It's so prevalent. Now, actually, I'm an optimist, so I say all this with a wry smile. And that's why I put this stuff together in the book, because at least then everybody can see it for what it is. I think it all falls to the individual now. The problem is that if you can get elected as a president or become a CEO talking like this, then there's a lot at stake. And so why would you stop doing that if you're that type of person?
If it keeps working, why would you ever change?
Yeah. All I would like to think is that for the vast majority of us, that is unacceptable. So it's our job to call it out and point it out. I know that's difficult when you're in a world of work, if you've got a boss who speaks like this, but I really think it's important. The worst thing that can happen to people at work whose bosses speak like this is that actually you don't know what you're supposed to be doing in your job because you don't understand what your boss is asking you to do. So in those cases, I strongly urge people to at the very, very least clarify what do you mean by X, what do you mean by Y, what do you mean? And also develop a reputation for speaking clearly so that actually people want you on their team because you cut through all the crap and everybody knows what they're doing. Indeed, you can make a big virtue of being someone who expresses things really clearly, probably get promoted as a result.
Yeah. And on that optimistic note, I would like to thank you very much for joining us today, Kevin. It's been an absolute pleasure.
You're welcome.
And of course, for our listeners, if you enjoyed what we talked about today, and of course, in our other episode in the series, you can visit Kevin at expertadviceonline.com and also at thegreatesthitsblog.com to keep up with everything that he is up to. And of course, if you would like to know more about the Business Bullshit book, there will be links in the description below where you can go, you can find out more, and you can also purchase the book. But once again, I would like to thank you very much for joining us on today's episode of Lid Publishing's podcast, Lid Radio. You can find us on our social media channels at Lid Radio. And once again, we very much look forward to seeing you next week.